League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome aboard the 12th voyage of the Talkin' Texans podcast. I am Paul Gallant, host of the Paul Gallant Show, which you can hear weekdays 10 to noon on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. He is DJ Bien-Aimé, Houston Texans beat reporter for ESPN.com. DJ, today we are just under 2 weeks away from Texans training camp. Over the last couple of weeks, we've talked about some of the most important new Texans. We started off with C.J. Stroud, the second overall pick. We talked about D'Amico Ryan's return to Houston. Now I think we can take a look at the Terminator, as he is nicknamed, Will Anderson, the Houston Texans' third overall pick, a guy that the Texans gave up a lot to get in that third overall spot. They gave up their first-round pick. Next year, they gave up a second-round pick. We obviously did the first-round swaps. Very expensive to get a guy who, at Alabama, was the leader of that Crimson Tide defense. Expectations are going to be interesting for him this year because of that trade. What are you expecting out of a rookie pass rusher joining this Texans team that obviously has an entirely new defense with D'Amico Ryans running the show and Matt Burke as the new defensive coordinator?
You mentioned that the over-under is eight and a quarter of sacks. I think he has to, at the bare minimum, be in that breath, mainly because they trade up a lot to go get him, right? Throughout the history of the NFL recently, that is, like, guys that don't at least hit the ground running at that position, you know, obviously you have some exceptions to the rule, right? Like, I mean, Clowney, even though, you know, He didn't have a single sack his first year because he didn't play. He ended up becoming an all-pro type defensive end for the Texans. I mean, we have J.J. Watt, who didn't have much stats his first year. But obviously, he wasn't drafted nearly as high. But again, he turned it on. I think when you mentioned the trade makes it to where when you make a trade like that, that guy has to make an impact from day one, especially at that position where, again, as I mentioned, yes, you have some guys that turn it around, but guys drafted that high, usually you kind of know it pretty early. So for me, got to be in that eight sack, you know, range. I mean, again, you're talking about a guy that had 34 and a half sacks at Alabama, 58 TFLs. Now, granted, it's not all about sacks, right? Like, if you can be disruptive in the run game, you can have a good pressure rate, you can get quarterback hits. But we still, at the end of the day, going to still need sacks because that's what a lot of guys are judged on, rightfully so. Like, I have no issue with that position being about can you get the quarterback on the ground, because we all know, like, a lot of possessions can end when you get a quarterback on the ground. Let's say second down, second and 10, you sack a quarterback. Now it's third and 13, third and 14, and it's so hard to complete those third and longs. Just, again, going through some of the lists of people that were drafted that, you know, pretty high, at the linebacker, I mean, not the linebacker spot, but at the end spot, like, obviously.
Guys are expected to be pass rushers.
Right. Michael Parsons was next level. He had 13 as a rookie. Bradley Chubb was drafted in top, I think he was drafted in top five. He had 12 as a rookie. Josh Allen from the Jags, drafted 7th overall. He had 10 as a rookie. Aiden Hutchinson, who came on strong at the end, I believe had, I'm looking at the numbers right now, he had like 9, I believe. He had 9.5. So, and then you got Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa played phenomenal his rookie year and helped his team get to the Super Bowl because their defense was so dominant. So, again, like, I'm not saying he got to be double digits, but when you give a guy amount, like, getting 8 is kind of like, that's kind of what we need. You know what I mean? Like,
at least to calm everyone down. Because I imagine people are going to freak out about it the same way, DJ, that they've been freaking out about this trade for what feels like months. A refresher for those who don't remember the exact specifics. They traded their 12th overall pick, their 33rd overall pick, in this past draft, and a 2024 first, and a 2024 third for that third overall pick, where they used to choose Will Anderson and pick 105. So you swap first round picks, you trade a first, a second, and a third to get this guy. And I think that is what is going to be on his shoulders. And it sucks. I feel for him because it's not his fault that that trade was made for him. Right. And to go back to something you said a little bit ago, DJ, I wonder if it was about, from the get-go, more than just getting a guy who was going to be productive and a good player. Because intangibles are sometimes overrated in this league. But it does feel like Anderson's the kind of guy that if you're D'Amico Ryans or if you're Nick Caserio and you heard all the rumors about how they wanted him right before the start of the draft, it does feel like that a guy coming from Alabama who's been a part of as close to an NFL operation as you're going to get at the college level.
Right.
Maybe it's unfair to expect him to be like a leader right out of the chute, but it does feel like he is also being looked at as somebody who can be that in addition to being a game wrecker defensively.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, if you take somebody that high, you hope that they become a leader for your operation. Because when you take a guy that high, you want them to become one of the best players on your team. And obviously, you want not all your best players have to be leaders. Like,
true.
The quarterback position, everybody, you know, your quarterback has to be your leader. But, like, you know, on defense, some guys aren't naturally leaders. They just go and they do their job. But, again, you know, you would hope that Will could become a leader on that defense as he continues to mature and develop and continue to, you know, become the player that the Texans hope he can become. Because, you know, it's so funny. After drafting out, everybody's so excited, think about all the hypotheticals. Now we get closer to football. It's all about production. It's all about results at this point. You know what I mean? You know, I remember I saw a list from my dog Landry. He had Will Anderson in the top 10 out of AFC South players, not defenders, but players. He had him in the top 10. So, like, that's the type of expectation that we had. Like, some people have for Will Anderson year one. And, like, I'm kind of cool with it. You know, if you give up that much, like, especially at those type of positions where the maturation process is a lot more linear, where it's just like, you know, a quarterback, you can be good, bad, great, or bad, okay, great. Usually the ends in that capacity, it's like, all right, average, good, great, or good, great, all time, or it's rare when you get the bad, okay, pop, and then they stay on that. Most times you kind of see it and it kind of continues along that path. I mean, I'm just looking at, as I mentioned earlier.
You see flashes early.
Right. Like a guy that was drafted pretty early, Farrell, that went to the Raiders, I think it was fourth overall. His first year, he had 4.5 sacks. And then, you know, 3 years later, he only had 10 for his whole entire career with the Raiders. Or like Solomon Thomas, who was drafted by the Niners. Pretty high, like very high. I think within the top three. I think it was probably three overall. Yeah, third overall. He had, I'm looking at it, 3 sacks. Next year, 1 sack, 2 sacks. So for his whole career, he's had 10 sacks total, and that's across 3 different teams. You know what I'm saying? So some guys don't ever like turn it on or ever figure it out per se. Not that they're not trying, not working hard, but we don't want that scenario though where like Will Anderson gets 4 sacks. And we're like, well, just give him time. Like, if you take somebody that high, they kind of got to hit the ground running. That's just how the nature of the beast is, the nature of the position is, and the nature of the assets that you've given up. And, I mean, is it fair? Nah, but life ain't fair. I mean, when you drafted a high, you have high expectations. So, you know, a lot of – if Will Anderson drafted in the 5th round, whatever. But he was drafted number 2-3 overall. You traded away multiple first-round picks and a second-round pick to get him. So – that's kind of where I'm at. You got to be, you know, he should be in that 8 sack range at the middle. Like, that should be the floor. You know what I'm saying? That should most definitely be the floor because we saw what you did at Alabama. We know the talent is there. We're not asking you. I can understand, like, maybe he was going from, like, playing stand-up linebacker and they drafted him to play the end. All right, it's going to be a maturation process. He's basically going to be playing the same position he played in college. He was standing up in college. Now he's going to have his hand in the dirt in the 5-tech trying to get after the quarterback. You know, I mean, he was basically doing that at college at Alabama his sophomore year. Because last year was more in 4-eye, so he's more in between like the tackle and the guard, but he's going to be a little bit more outside the shade of the tackle, which is the 5-tech. So that's something that he's used to. So you kind of need production early.
Yeah. It's a boom or bust position. If you don't see it early, people are going to freak out about it. They're going to complain about it. And I think, DJ, I'm looking for a strong finish to the year.
Yep.
Because the statistics, like you mentioned with Aiden Hutchinson, the statistics can look bad, say it's 5 sacks or 6 sacks over the course of a rookie season. And to point at some recent examples for the Houston Texans, because they have taken draft pass rushers early on, two of their first overall picks are pass rushers. Mario Williams had just 4.5 sacks his rookie year in 2006. He had a successful career, though. J.J. Watt had just 5.5 sacks as a rookie. He obviously finished the season strong, though, especially that pick six in the playoff game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Brooks Reed, a second-round pick that year, had 6. I remember Peter King was writing in the Monday Morning Quarterbacks preview of the season back then, or whatever the hell he was writing at that point in time. He predicted that Brooks Reed was going to have a 20-sack season and win Defensive Player of the Year. It ended up being J.J. Watt. Devin Clowney, 0 sacks in 2014. Now, he only played 4 games because the NRG Stadium pallet grass was an absolute disaster and led to several injuries, whether it's Brett Hartman, DeMeco Ryans, Wes Welker, et cetera. A lot of injuries there. But then his next year, he had 4.5. And you did always see flashes with Clowney, just maybe not as a pass rusher. So defining success for a pass rusher is tricky. When you're taking third overall, a lot of people are going to be like, yo, you need to be a 10-sack-a-year guy. And sometimes that's not the case. What I'm looking for is a guy that's just going to make it through the 5 years of the contract. And on top of that,
what?
Get an extension. That's what I'm looking for, DJ.
What are you looking for specifically?
You draft somebody in the first round, I don't look at it from the perspective of he's a top 10 pick. He has to be X, Y, or Z. I just don't. I look for a good player. And I get it. You're expecting to get in a Hall of Fame.
You can't take a guy that high, give him what you give, and only get a good player.
Well, if he's not an all-pro, if he's not a pro bowler, is it a failure of a pick? Is it a failure of a pick?
If he's not a pro bowler and he's not an all-pro player, based on what you gave up, it's a failure of a pick, probably.
I guess I'm of the assumption that
when I'm talking to people across the league, like exec guys, people in front offices, when you draft people that high, you're expecting blue chip, you're expecting dominant player, you're expecting one of the best at their position. That's why you're taking them that high. So if you get a guy that's just solid, and you take him in the top three, giving up what you gave up. Yeah, people are going to say you lost that trade.
But I don't look at it from a matter of winning the trade or losing the trade, because I could just as easily say, well, those other picks, you could have totally missed on them. You could have missed at pick 33. You could have missed with your first-round pick the next year. So it's always tricky, because I think sometimes we overvalue the idea of draft picks as a whole. What I'm looking for out of Will Anderson is obviously more than, hey, like, solid. But I don't think the pick is a failure if he is less than solid because of what they gave up. If they liked him, he has a big culture and presence. If the guy is somebody that is allowing DeMeco Ryans to do X, Y, or Z, then the pick can still end up being a success if he's like a 7-8 sack a year kind of player.
Not when you give what you gave up, though. Like, when you drop a guy that high, again, you expect, like, a DN. If you get a DN that high, top three, you're expecting Bosa, Joy Bosa. Like, you're expecting that type of production, you know what I'm saying? Like, and for what it's worth, Chase Young in my head. Will has that type of ability. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's that type of force. So that's why they took him that high, because they believe in that type of talent. So if he's not that, let's say if he's Brian Burns, that's still cool. That's cool. No issues. If he's, let's say he's a Carl Lawson type of defensive end. You know what I'm saying? Carl Lawson is good in the analyst category. He's very productive. He can be productive. He can cause pressure. But you don't take a guy that high expecting Carl Lawson. You take a guy expecting, like, Matthew Judon. You know, that's our production. You're expecting Nick Bosa. You're expecting Joey Bosa. He went number 3 overall. So, at the end of it, we got to have standards. You know?
I get that we have standards. Okay. But the way I'm looking at it, and part of it has to do with the Texans history, DJ, which has not been very good.
Right.
You take a look at Mario Williams. Mario Williams did have some very good seasons with the Texans. He had 14 sacks his second season. He had 12 sacks his third year. That's but good. Was he top five, top 10 pass rusher the entire time that he was there when he was the number one overall pick? And then I will piggyback that with Jadeveon Clowney, which is the same thing. And I'm a big Clowney defender.
But Clowney was all pro with the Texans.
True. Second team all pro, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
That's still great. If you first right. or second team, what?
I get what you're saying. But second team all pro, you're voting for it, is weird where you literally just need like one or two votes, at least with the way that the NFL voting used to be for second team all pro. Like Bernard McKinney's a second team all pro too. Like, it's more that there are expectations that are attached to those early picks. And you can still, I think, end up being a successful player. Because I think that Jadeveon Clowney was a good pick by the Texans.
I agree.
I mean, it could have been Blake Bortles. And I think that Mario Williams, like, you could have ended up with Vince Young. You could have ended up with Reggie Bush, which was the correct pick, obviously, with the benefit of Captain Hindsight going forward. So that's where it's tricky. And I'm definitely being a lot more generous with it. You're right in that there should be a high standard there. I guess I'm looking at it from the perspective of it could still be a successful pick. The guy comes in and is a good player, even with the cost that was given up to get him.
All right, so let me ask you this. So let's say hypothetically, he doesn't make any Pro Bowls, no All Pros, and they decline his fifth-year option.
Bad.
All right.
Yes.
So, like, if you're not a Pro Bowl caliber defensive lineman, All Pro, you're drafted that high, you're not a double-digit sack guy. Because mostly, if you get double-digit sacks, you'll be a Pro Bowl. You'll be an All Pro guy. Like, it's rare where you're always racking up sacks. And you don't become
an at least pro. As an alternate, right?
Yeah, right. You're gonna make a Pro Bowl or something. If he doesn't make any of those and they're kind of fifth year option, then the trade didn't work
100%. And I think that's the thing we should be looking at. Do they pick up the fifth year option at the end of it? And that obviously involves a lot of patience and maybe not being able to judge at the end of 1 year. So, of course.
I'm not saying we got to judge the
him after
1 year. I'm just saying, like, year one, you still do want a good amount of production
100%.
You know, I think he wants that. The team wants that. I think anybody associated with the Texans, like, they want that. I was just more, you know, we kind of – I don't want to be on a tangent. We just more talking about –
No, this is a good conversation.
Line. Yeah, we're talking good about conversation. That line of, okay, what does that look like by year five if he's still an eight-sack – he's an eight-sack guy, no Pro Bowlers, no All-Pros, then the trade was a flat-out failure. Like, I don't even think that's even, like, remotely, you know what I mean? Because –
I got you. I'm a lot more laissez-faire with the trade costs. I think sometimes we look at them in a perspective like, oh, well, if you gave up these picks, you're going to hit on these picks. And I'm generally like, well, you're probably not going to hit on these picks, actually. You know, like, there's a very good chance that either C.J. Stroud or Will Anderson are going to end up disappointing just based off of the odds. You know, you're picking a guy in the first round. It is what it is. You got to take these bold risks. It's a sucky job. you really don't have much room for failure. So, I think we're on the same page in that, like, okay, he does have to produce at some level for this pick to be considered a success. And I would say specifically at the end of it, it's whether or not they pick up that fifth year. To go back to the over-under of 8.25 sacks, I think that he's got an advantage going into training camp where he's going to be going up against Laremy Tunsil. He's going to be going up against Tytus Howard. When they do have full padded practices, of which they have a lot less these days, that is going to help, I would think, a guy like Will Anderson more than maybe a pass rusher in another situation. And to go back to what you were saying a little bit earlier, too, where he's going to have his hand in the ground and he might be playing wide nine where he's lined up outside of tight ends and stuff, just running straight at the quarterback. That does make me feel pretty good about his potential to get that over for that 8.25.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, with D'Amico down – obviously, Matt Burton calling plays, but with D'Amico game planning and help trying to put him in position to succeed, along with the fact what helps Will is the fact that his D line isn't crap, right? There's not crap around him, right?
Like, get Jerry Hughes.
Yeah, you got Jerry Hughes on the opposite side. You got Grenard coming in. You're going to have, again, Sheldon Rankins, Malik Collins. Like, you have talent around you that's going to allow you to take pressure off of you. You know what I'm saying? Instead of you having to worry about getting double teamed. Because I don't think. They're at least going in week one. I don't think teams are gonna have to utilize. They're gonna go into like, hey, we got a double team like this guy. You know what I'm saying? Like Nick Bosa gets double teams. Joey Bosa gets double teams. I know I've been saying the Bosa's all day. Like, they're the only guys, but like Michael Parsons get double teams. Sometimes that's the Marcus Lawrence. Like, I'm just going off of Max Crosby. You know, like, those guys week in week out, we got double teams guy. You know what I'm saying? So early on, he's not worried about that, which is good. No one on the D-line is about to worry about that, which is good, which allows them to be able to feast on their one-on-ones, you know? So, yeah, I agree with you that it for sure gives Will some room, not for mistakes. I don't use that. That's not what I'm really trying to say. But I think that the fact that he has good talent around him, he's going to get more one-on-one opportunities to make plays. That's what I'm really trying to say.
Yeah, and also, you know, heard Laremy Tunsil talking about Will Anderson on the Pat McAfee show. And he mentioned, like, hey, he likes Will Anderson. I hope that Will Anderson is asking Laremy Tunsil a bazillion questions, sort of like in the same way CJ Stroud's asking Matt Burke questions about mm-hmm. what works going up against a tackle, what doesn't work. Because that is a nice, just a different set of eyes to have potentially as an ally to you as you go into your first season. So
Yeah, I agree. Because I remember Laremy, one person he'll credit a lot to for a lot of his success is Robert Quinn. So he's always told me the story that his rookie year, he went against Robert Quinn. At that point, Robert Quinn had been all pro, had 19 and a half sacks. They're both were in Miami. So Robert Quinn was trying to kind of revive his career, per se. And he said, bro, he used to just whoop my, you know what, like day after day. Like he's like, he had no answers for him. But he said like that really helped his development to try to get right and figure out how to get right. So Laremy understands the value of going against a vet that is seasoned and is one of the best. So that's going to, you know, I know we use the cliche iron sharpens iron, which is kind of cliche-ish because it's not necessarily true. Because I've seen plenty of iron sharpening irons. Now iron be dud as hell. You know what I mean? But I think that's a legitimate, you know, iron sharpening iron because both the guys, I mean, Will is highly touted, along with Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard, who are legitimate NFL top tier offensive tackles. And there's gonna be some weeks where Will does not even see a guy as good as the two guys he's seen in practice.
100%. Okay, DJ, ESPN, where you work, is doing a top 10 list by position going into 2023 across the NFL. And to this point, we are recording this on Wednesday, July 12th. We've seen off-ball linebackers, defensive tackles, edge rushers, cornerbacks, safeties. Jalen Petrie, an honorable mention among safeties. In the days to come, we will see tight ends, running backs, which could feature Dameon Pierce, offensive tackles, which could feature Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard. Go back to tight ends for a second. It could feature Dalton Schultz, who has been on it before. You have guards and centers, quarterbacks, and wide receivers. So we could just go through this really quickly for the 2024 season. Is there anybody on the Texans roster that you expect to be a part of this top 10 conversation? Let's start with off-ball linebackers. I think very quickly we would both say no.
Yeah. I don't see it right now. Hopefully we're wrong.
Right.
Nah, I mean, there's just nothing that's kind of helping. Like, then it's supposed to be like, oh, I could see that. I mean, it's kind of hard.
You're
to see
hoping
that.
D'Amico Ryans is Yoda to Christian Harris and that it's Fred Warner 2.0.
Right.
That's pretty much it, though. And that might be unrealistic to expect.
Unrealistic? Fred Warner is like one of the best linebackers to ever play a game.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, like when I watch Fred, I'm not thinking, oh, this is the best one of the best linebackers in the game or best linebacker in the league. I'm like, no, this is one of the best linebackers I've ever seen in my life.
He's really
seriously
good.
Like Fred is like, wow.
I got to cover Bobby Wagner towards the end of his time in Seattle before he jumped to LA and then came back to Seattle. And I remember being told that Bobby Wagner was the best linebacker in the league. And then I saw the Seahawks play the 49ers and Fred Warner. And I was like, Fred Warner's better. At least at this moment in time, Fred Warner is better. Not to say that Bobby Wagner wasn't that guy like a couple of years before. Right. But that title can be taken very, very quickly away. All right. On to the next positional group. Defensive tackles. Could we see a Houston Texan for 2024 being on a list for top 10 defensive tackles?
I think top 10. Oh, yeah, that's tough.
Yeah,
good ones. You know what I'm saying? I think
We want it to be Malik Collins, but that again is going to involve a massive jump from where he is right now.
Yeah. I think Malik is if there were a 2B1, it could be Malik for sure, because he's really impactful in the run game, but you kind of need also really good production.
Yeah, you gotta be tackle. Chris Jones ish really in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta be special, you know, at that D tackle spot to really stand out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of good guys, you know, that play that position. I would put Rankus in that category of good. I put Malik in that category of good, but like
we're talking top Rank. 10.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking Donald. Exactly. We're talking all those guys.
Right. You know, I'm trying to pull up the rankings right now. Rankings 2023 of just like who's in it. I mean, you obviously, you know, we know that
there's Donald, there's Jones, Donald. Simmons in Tennessee, Javon Hargrave in San Francisco,
right? Quinn Williams, Dexter Lawrence, DeForest Buckner, you know what I'm saying? Darren Payne, Cam Hayward from the Steelers.
Cam Hayward's Jonathan nine. Allen. Like,
exactly.
That's a damn good list.
Think of like Christian Wilkins, Vita Vea, Leonard Williams, Derek Brown. They're all outside.
Yeah.
The top 10, you know? So, yeah.
Former Texan DJ Reader also outside the top 10. And UH's own Ed Oliver outside the top 10.
So you basically.
And he just got paid.
Yeah, so he basically, like, they would have to take, like, another jump to be able to
massive get jump. That.
So, you know, we'll put that in, we'll see.
Edge rushers, we've talked a lot about Will Anderson. I don't think it's going to happen for Will Anderson year one. It could happen year two.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. When we talk about Will Anderson, I finally got those stats that I was
– You did, hit me.
I finally got it. So
you're like, talking about rookies, their first year sack-wise in the NFL.
Right, so Will Anderson – I mean, not Will Anderson. So, like – the only guys that had less than seven was Kayvon Thibodeau from the Giants. He had four, but apparently his analytics were solid. Like pass rush ring weight, pressure rate. Apparently, you know, according to the analytics committee, was pretty good. Trayvon Walker, who had 3.5, and then Farrell, who had 4.5, and then that's it. Those are the only people that had under. Four or fewer. I think that's it. Oh, well, 4.5 is so under five. Yeah. You know, you got Joey Bosa at 10.5, DeForest Buckner had 6, Myles Garrett had 7, and then also had like a really good pass rush win rate. And then along with a lot of good pressure too. Apparently Myles Garrett pressure was only 8.7, which
that's surprising hearing both of those numbers for Garrett, because I assume Garrett came in and killed everybody.
Yeah, like a wrecking ball. Right. You know,
like so. Mason Rudolph's head.
Yeah, you know, Josh Allen from the Jags had 10.5. Like, Chase Young had 7.5, and his pass rush win rate was 22.4, which was 8th highest. So, you know, like
– it's an uphill climb.
Yeah. So, I think what's his name? Will Anderson. If he can have something similar to that, he'll be in the honorable mention. Like, if he could be in that 10-ish rate, because – some of the 2023 is also like some of the
projection.
Yeah. So if Will can have a similar rookie year to Aiden Hutchinson or a, because he had 9.5, basically 10, a decent pressure rate of 9.4. Bradley Chubb had 12, pressure rate of 10 point. I think, you know, we could see him on the honorable mentions list.
Okay.
Yep. Because again, it'll be projection. You're like, all right, he should be able to take this next leap, you know what I'm saying? So
next up, and I'm going to let you cook on this one, because I feel like you have been beating the drum the most on this off season, because you're really impressed by what you've seen by a certain Houston Texan. It's the cornerback group. There's lots of good corners in the NFL. It feels like there are good ones entering the league every single season as well. DJ, is there anybody on the Houston Texans that you've noticed maybe more this year than in years past?
I think Derek Stingley should be. He'll probably be an honorable mention for sure. He'll for sure at the bare minimum be an honorable mention. After this season, he'll be an honorable mention at the bare minimum. So this is me saying he could be top 10 also, because sometimes guys want to see because, again, it's voted by players, execs, and coaches. So sometimes they want to see you do it multiple years. But I can easily see him have a season where he's in the top 10 or he's in honorable mention because, again, based on what I've seen throughout – spring, he looks like he's ready to show the world why he was drafted that high. So just from the movement skills, the ball skills, et cetera, I can go all on and on. So I could see him without question being in that top 10 list or honorable mention list with just, all right, you got to do it again. And then he's in the top 10 list in 2025.
I will point out for the honorable mention, Tariq Woolen was arguably as good as Sauce Gardner last year. He's honorable mention.
Yep.
Xavien Howard has 28 interceptions since 2017. Honorable mention. Tre'Davious White, I think that's largely due to injury that he's in this category, right, along with also receiving votes, former Defensive Player of the Year, Stephon Gilmore, James Bradbury, who played great in Philadelphia last year, J.C. Jackson, who led the NFL in interceptions not that long ago, I believe, with the New England Patriots. Now he's with the Chargers, had a really frustrating year last year.
Right.
Those are some of the guys that he is going to have to be in the same conversation as. Is that to say it's impossible? No. And honestly, with what I'm hearing, and obviously with where he was drafted and with what we saw from him at LSU when he was going up against some of the best receivers in the country, I do not think it's anywhere close to impossible. And I'm liking what I'm hearing about him based off of his size and strength. And, of course, DJ, what you've been reporting on coming from Texans OTAs.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right about that. Sure.
But that's the whole thing. Like this, all these lists, I mean, it's going to be tough competition for a lot of these players. I think the really good thing that we're talking about right now is the fact that there at least are some potential candidates on the Houston Texans that actually could find their way in there next year if they're not going to be in there as a couple of the other lists, specifically running back, offensive tackle, are released over the next couple of days.
That's a great point. I was thinking about that earlier when we had this topic. Like, at least they have guys that could be on that list, and they have guys that will be on the list in 2023. So that's a really good point by you.
Safety. Jalen Petrie is an honorable mention on this list for 2023. Can he get to top 10 going into 2024?
The question really is, no. It's not, can he get top 10? The question is, can he get top 5, right? That's the real question. Because, again, like, he was very good as a rookie. Like, he was elite. Like, as you see in one of the quotes literally mentions him being a baller. Like, he said he completely balled out. He was just in Houston. You know, like, he was, like, the quote says from an AFC scout, he balled out last year. It's just nobody knows it because he plays in Houston. He's going to be really good for a long time. So, again, he was the NFL's only player to, again, register 140 tackles and 5 interceptions, one of 8 players in NFL history to ever do that. So the question really is, can Jalen Petrie become top 5 next year? And I think his talent says yes, because you look at the top 5 list right now, you got Mika, Durham, Justin, Buda Baker, Javion Hollins. So now I would say that the top 3 spots, well, the top 2 spots are locked. Like they're locked. They're locked. Like, it's going to be impossible to really move them unless they get hurt. Da, da, da. Even if they get hurt, like those guys are stamped. You know, Buda is also stamped. Justin Simmons is phenomenal. So it's really like, can he have a better season than Holland, or have a better season than Bird or Bates or Gardner Johnson or Hufanga from the 49ers. Because those are guys going to be trying to claw into that top 5 range.
Yeah.
And I think based on just what D'Amico is going to ask Jalen Petrie to do in this system, I think top 5 is very possible. I don't want to say it's likely, because, again, like, that's a very big proclamation. But I wouldn't be shocked if he's in the top 5. Next year, I would not be shocked at all, because I think he's going to be a Pro Bowl for sure. The question is, can he be all pro? And I wouldn't be shocked if he's all pro next year. If he's all pro, then obviously we're talking about a top 5 player. So I think the question isn't, oh, can he be in the top 10? I think the question really is, can he be in the top 5?
I definitely think he could be in the top 10 this coming season. I would be with you in that. I think it's a fair prediction to make, say there was, like, gambling odds on what ESPN's top 10 rankings are going to be next year. I wish there were. The real question is a matter of the guys who are at the top, some of which are a little bit older than others. Derwin James has a lot of mileage on him because of the injuries, but he has played 2 seasons back-to-back where he's been relatively healthy. Justin Simmons is going to turn 30 this season. And after that, I was shocked to see that Javon Holland is only 23 years old. They have him ranked as the number 5 guy. He is a Miami Dolphins safety. He's only 23. That's pretty crazy that he's number 5 overall on this list.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I think him and Vic Fangio's scheme is going to it might playing alongside with Jalen Ramsey and Xavien Howard, it could get nasty for offenses trying to throw the ball in that secondary sometimes. So
let's let's do two groups at once really quickly. Tight ends and wide receivers. I think there's really only one guy in that group because he's been there before that's possible, and that's Dalton Schultz. And if Dalton Schultz and C.J. Stroud develop a big rapport, like that seems likely. I just don't see it with a wide receiver on the Texans right now.
Yeah, at least right now. I mean, like maybe we get a massive jump from like Robert Wood. I mean, it's not even like a shot at like the receiving core per se. It's just you got to realize who's actually in those groups, right? Tyreek Hill is going to be in that group. Adam, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, like the list goes on and on and on and on and on. Maybe Jalen Waddle, AJ Brown, maybe Keenan Allen. Like the list is crazy. Like the amount of receiving time that we have in today's game is remarkable. You know, so like it's so deep that like teams have to consider, yo, we paid $20 million for our number two wide receiver. You know, like the Dolphins are going to be in that point where they're going to have to pay Waddle and pay him a lot and possibly make Tyreek Hill their number two wide receiver in terms of payroll, or, you know, give Tyreek pay cut or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Same with the Eagles. They might do the same thing because Devonta Smith is so good. And I think it just speaks to the amount of talent that's in the NFL. So it's not even like a shot like, oh, the Texans have a guy that can't be in the top 10. It's more like the top 10 is just super loaded. Like it's loaded. You know, it's kind of like the quarterback position, where like guys like a healthy Kyler Murray might not make it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's just kind of where I see the receiver spot is at.
Running backs, we'll see if Damian Pierce is on this list as it's released in the coming days. I think there's a pretty good chance that he's top 10.
I think it'd be honorable mention for the 2023 list, 2024 list. I think it'll be top 10. I think it could be top 10. I think it will be top 10, actually. So
I'm curious as to if they use him more in the passing game. It's nice that they have somebody else to actually help him out in Devlin Singletary, who is definitely by default better than the guys that they had behind him. That hopefully keeps him fresher for 17 games.
Yeah, he's got to, you know, continue to improve his pass catching ability.
100%
to truly be a threat in that capacity. And we're not talking about catching the checkdown. We're talking about, can you run a Texas route, which is like an angle route where you go out and come back in, or can you run really crisp out routes? Can you run really good option routes? Can they split you out and you can run a crisp slant against a linebacker or safety that's on you? So it's more of that. Like, can he be a legitimate factor? He doesn't need to be a weapon in the pass game because, again, like, you just can't ask that from him based on he hasn't had to do that much in his career. But that's kind of where I'm at. That's kind of where I'm at there. So we'll see on that front. But I do think he'll be honorable mention this year, and I think he has a great shot to be top 10 next year.
Offensive tackles, Laremy Tunsil is there. He will be there this year. He will be there next year. I think the real question is Titus Howard, can he play his way into that? And does that mean he earns some big-time money from the Houston Texans?
Yeah, I think he could be top. I think he could be honorable mention. It's just hard to crack that top 10 list, mainly because there's a lot of seniority. And again,
there's 60 guys too across the NFL.
Right. So yeah, exactly. You know, so actually 64 to be the exact number. Yeah. So it kind of makes it a little tricky because he didn't even come close to making a Pro Bowl, even though he should have. He's obviously a really good player. I think he could. I think he might be in the receive votes category for 2023, and I think that as long as he has another good 2022, did in 2022. In 2023, then I think 2024 for that list, he should be at the bare minimum honorable mention.
Guards and centers. Shaq Mason, honorable mention maybe for this year. I don't know. Going forward, it's really about how you feel about Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, you know, it's like that's also like what makes that even harder. You mentioned like, oh, yeah, you got 64 starters. Interior, you got basically what is 3 times 32? 96 players, 96 starters. So that's good. I mean, to be top 10 in that group is
insane.
You know, that's a hard ask.
Very hard.
So I wouldn't put that on Juice, and I don't predict Kenyon Green will be that at least coming. Because old linemen, you know, we talk about D-line and how they usually hit the ground running. Offensive line is all over the place. Some guys stink. Early on, they turned around quickly. Some guys are really good out the gate, and then they fall apart, you know. So I think that one's more like you don't really put the tools out of expectation. You just kind of let their development bake at its rate, at its pace.
Last group. Is C.J. Stroud going to be on this list going into 2024? I feel like he's going to have to win Rookie of the Year to even be honorable mention, let alone to be top 10.
Yep.
Again, it's going to be hard.
It's going to be super hard. I mean, again, like you have – like just going to 2024, you have Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, I already said Mahomes, right? Okay, cool. I already said that. Let's go to the NFC. I mean, Dak, Jalen Hurts. The quarterback situation in the NFC is a little tricky. But again, going back to the AFC, got further up, Trevor Lawrence. I'm trying to think of anybody else I'm missing. I already said Justin Herbert, right? Okay.
I think so. See, that's how tricky it gets.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's eight guys that I just mentioned that we know are going to be. Or that should be in that top 10 category. He's in that vein where they're getting votes. Dang. Yeah, the AFC is so loaded, man.
I know. They're all in the AFC. It's not fair.
Yeah, you know, like those eight players that we just mentioned are for sure going to be on that list in 2024, you know? And I mean, Aaron Rodgers, if he's still playing in 2024, he'll be on the list because players and coaches and execs, they revere Aaron. So if he's playing in 2024, he's going to be on the list also. Like he's going to be there. They're not taking him out of the top 10. Like right. They're not taking him out of the top 10. The only guy that I mentioned that they'll probably take out of the top 10 is Lamar. And they always do that. But Lamar's a tricky discussion for a lot of people.
I don't get that. Yeah. He's a good passer.
A lot of internal bias, a lot of internal bias and pre-draft projections that people want to hold on to until they die. So
I can't believe that they have it though, DJ, as someone, and maybe I watched a little more ACC football than anybody, but like he was truly the most outstanding player in the country that year. He was so electric to watch, and he does not get nearly enough credit for being, I think, a pretty good downfield passer.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like Greg Roman is the guy I'm looking at.
Right. Like when I was at Louisville in 2016, when he was there, he was the best show in football. He was like the best show in I ain't talking about best show of football in college. I'm talking about the best show in all of football. It was the best show to watch.
Like, I wanted him to be the Heisman winner. I was like, better be Lamar, nobody else. And I also was making an argument that, like, screw Washington. No one wants to watch them. I don't care if Louisville has four losses. Put him in the college football playoff.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they would have got crushed, but
they lost to Houston. That was the big problem. They had lost to Houston. They would have made it.
Yeah, because I've talked to players on my team. Once they lost to Houston, they were just like, F it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, at that point, like if they would have beat Houston, they beat UK, and then they're in.
Sorry. On that note, the sad DJ Bieniemy, check him out, ESPN.com, covering your Houston Texans. I am Paul Gallant. So long, farewell. We'll take a look at Houston Texans training camp a week away next week on the Talkin' Texans podcast.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.